Hello, and welcome to the Purple Rock Podcast. I am your host, Andy, and helping us out, as our regular co-host, John, will not be with us tonight, is Emma. And Emma, before we start the episode, I want to let you know not to worry. If the guys come to me with a male alliance, I'll let you know that you're on your own.
Cool. I mean, I'm pretty much always on my own anyway, so...
Yeah, and this episode shows you why, right? If we, like, let more than one woman get together, we could be in trouble. I could get blindsided.
Because we might vote you off of the podcast?
Look, I mean, that's a point. If we could vote people off of this thing, let's just say there might be a few torches stuffed here or there. Just so everybody knows, the reason why Emma, whatever we're going to call her, is here with us tonight is probably obvious to some of you. John could not be here because there's a bit of a weather situation where he's living, but everything sounds like he and his family are currently safe. They just have more important things to do than talk about Survivor, if that's possible.
wishing you all the best, John.
Yeah, and anybody else that happens to be from that weird America's Dong, I think that's what it is.
Also, you know, if Joe could let me know what this so-called weather thing is, I'm very curious.
Yeah, and so that what means is that you're stuck with me still, which is like, you know, all summer, you and I, and then all of this. Like, people are probably wishing, you know, some kind of disaster to take a break from me, but sorry, we don't get extreme weather where we live, just bad weather most of the time.
I don't get that part either.
No, you just, you know.
Okay, one day,
and at some point, if this podcast is interrupted by an earthquake where you are, I'll finally get the dream of doing a solo podcast, which would be a tough adjustment.
That could happen at literally every moment. Like, some might have heard there was, like, this big, like, earthquake advisory thing because there were some shakes out somewhere that they thought could affect the San Andreas Fault because you can't normally predict earthquakes. Nothing happened. It's fine. Yeah,
nobody heard that. We're actually focused on real people. Stop trying to make everything about yourself, Emma.
Because that's what
you millennials do to transition into this episode. So we start with this episode of Hannah. God, she was awful. It was painful. And frankly, I think it was a black mark on your entire generation, and you have to answer for it now.
Well, I would like to point out that Adam and Zeke are also part of my generation, and they were the ones suffering that. And I personally am closer in age to definitely to Adam and about equidistant to Zeke as I am to Hannah. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, I am someone who's probably a pretty socially awkward person, but also avoids that sort of confrontation she was going for, so I don't really relate to that. But, oh, man, girl, stop. Stop. You're making it worse.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's almost like a parody of, like, you know, a millennial think piece. And it's like, my feelings need to be validated right now. I don't care what you need. I need you guys to be okay with me now. And I'm not going to leave until you recognize and acknowledge me.
Yeah, like, there hadn't even been evidence that they were, like, actually mad. Like, obviously they were shaking, you know, and it's the whole thing, but it's like, judging from what we had seen in the preview, you know, it almost seemed like they, like, went and, like, attacked her. But it's like, especially because she has more of a defense than everyone, like, they clearly, even though they didn't know at the time, they know that a conversation was happening at Tribal, which means they know Hannah either A, was last minute addition, or B, was, like, resistant to it, and was, like, trying to, like, change it or something. Like, she was in, like, the best spot to still be okay with those guys. Like, give them time to, like, decompress and, like, you know, get closure on what happened, and then, like, let them sleep on it the next morning and be like, you know, God, I still like you guys better. I don't even like these people, but, you know, they told me they had the numbers, so, and I couldn't get that message to you because of where I was sitting, and I'm sorry, but, like, let's see if we can get Will and Michaela and, like, flip on these people.
Yeah, and, like, I'm okay with her attempting to, you know, bridge that gap right then, but when they're telling you, and especially when Zeke is telling you, not right now, Hannah, I need to be left alone, I will talk to you later about this. I just need some time. Not right now. And it's just like, God, you're so dense. And yeah, there's the defense of, you know, social awkwardness and all that. And obviously, she has some issues with social awkwardness. But it's just more like just selfishness. They are the losers. You were blindsided to a degree, but you didn't lose. Let them be. And moreover, like, even if it's not even a win or loser situation, if somebody is working to, hold in their emotions to not get mad at you, and they just make an honest request of, can you please give me a minute? You give them a minute. It's not that complicated. Like Zeke was trying and trying and trying until, you blow up, because that's what happens. When somebody's asking you to give them a minute because they're going to get angry and you don't, they will get angry. That's what they were telling you. That's what they were trying to avoid. Oh, no, how dared the Hulk attack me when he told me that you wouldn't like it when I get angry? and I gotta say, like, this combined with the last we saw of Hannah in the episode before, where she took 10 minutes to cast a vote, tells me, I think, basically all I need to know, and that she is not going to be a player worth worrying about. She just lacks the, maybe it's just a personal confidence. Maybe it's a constant driven by a desire for people to like her, which, not great in somebody who's going to try and do things in Survivor.
Yeah, and I mean, I get that, like, my whole humor defense mechanism thing is to make people like me. But it's like you were saying, the whole, let me have a minute. It's not even, like, so many things we say are like when we've discussed, like, bullying and stuff like that, it's like, that's a bad thing to do, like, as a person, obviously, but we also hate it because it's bad gameplay. And that's sort of another thing. Like, not only is it bad because, like, they're going to be less inclined to want to deal with her, but also just as, like, human being respect thing. Like, just if someone in life is like, hey, can I, just have a minute, like, unless it's, like, an emergency, something.
No, you shouldn't have a minute. We need this now. But there was time, man. Most of these wounds aren't healed the night of a vote out.
There was no real reason. I get, like, wanting to get that instant, like, hey, let's talk. But, yeah, once they say, like, look, can we just deal with this later, like, do that.
Yeah, like, you're not a married couple. You can go to bed angry. Nothing's going to be wrong here. There's plenty of time for this. But, no, she just has this desperate need to be liked. And it's probably because, especially from these people. These are the people that she liked. And I'm guessing she was driven by a little bit of guilt. But, sorry, yeah, just go ahead, try. But when you hear no, learn to take it as an answer. And I know, on our site, there are at least some people, maybe just one person, in fact, with a great color in her name, purple something, was saying that Zeke didn't look good in this situation either, or, you got to toughen up into the game. But I don't know. Like, this is a moment I feel like most people will give you for being a little salty. Because it's not like he's blowing up at people, it's not like he comes back at camp and just starts tearing into people, or, like for instance, like Tina in Blood vs. Water.
Or like Whitney in, not Keith because he was gone, but like in South Pacific, they're like, you disgust me. Like, he was just like, yo, I'm going to go chill with the bro who voted with me and, like, cool off.
Yeah,
we're at. They even did the, like, oh, good, good move, guys. Wow, that was great. Hats off to you, Figgy, which I was like, no, guys, she did nothing.
she didn't get voted out, so I guess,
She did more than Taylor, I guess, in that whole move, in that she was present while they talked to Michaela. But, that was not her move.
But, I don't fault them for not recognizing the group that were made, because if they had, they wouldn't have been blindsided. But, they did the right thing. They did that. And then we are going to go off here and feel the human emotion associated with this. They did the gameplay thing and coming down. Let us do this. And, you don't get to interrupt that. And if you do, you don't get to get pissy about it. And I love that, not to play victim, but I'm totally about to play victim. I will say one thing in Hannah's credit is that she made a good joke about it on Twitter several months later. So she has some self-awareness now, or at least can recognize that in herself when, you see it back. And I got to say, it's not uncommon for somebody that's incredibly social awkward to do well on social media. Just throwing that out there is maybe something I've recognized. And also maybe she, you know, a big part of communication, and my wife will laugh about me saying this, is not just the words you say, but body language and all of that. Maybe it was too dark for her to pick up on that. But, you know, there were the words like, not right now, and then Adam pointing it back. Is this, we will still talk to you, but leave, please.
Adam as the mediator really kind of cracked me up on that one. He's just like, Hannah, he says, not right now. Can you please just leave him alone? Like, it wasn't even, like, about him. It was just, like, he was, like, Zeke's, like, bodyguard.
And I gotta say, like, I've been in that where it's like, just give me a minute to talk. And then, you know, predictably, it goes poorly. Not obviously in Survivor or even in, like, other world situations, just basically with one person. And that person probably knows, but they want the fight. Anyway, so, yeah, that was, oh, man, it was just, like, head-slapping. Just, and honestly, I think it was good television, though. And yeah. I think it tells us a lot about Hannah. Like, do you think that this is something that she'll, like, miraculously gain a hold of throughout this game?
I mean, I guess it's possible, but it would, like, take some time. I think it's more of a something that you gain when you if you play again.
Yeah, I think that.
And it's, I mean, it's
also, yeah, a confidence you gain as you get older as a human being is another part. The other thing is, it's just between this and the Vo thing, it's just the damage she's done in the eyes of those around her, right? Like, so even if she does make a, you know, a remarkable turnaround, like Aubrey did, people still see her maybe as that, you know,
indecisive, like, yeah, exactly what hurt Aubrey.
Yeah, the needy, you know, person that she was at the beginning, so, yeah. All right, so that was how the beginning, the episode began. Let's talk about how it ended. How did you feel about Paul going home?
It was fun. It was not, if nothing else, it stopped, you know, the unfortunate downward trend we were having there. I mean, at least Lucy wasn't in danger. That'd be a look.
Yeah, I mean, that was my prediction. The thing about doing predictions on a show is sometimes I use it as a forum to make jokes or make points, and that's what, and then I just lose. Unlike you, who is like 2-0 after the start of the season.
Hey, who would have? Well, doing what? Nobody.
Preseason
got
doesn't matter. No.
No, I just said nobody got Mari, right?
Like. Oh yeah, so not 2-0, but you have
2-1.
Most right. That's right.
Yes.
Solid.
And considering I did very poorly. Last time. But anyway, people don't care that much about that. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, we like Ken and David, so I was glad to see something they wanted to have happen.
Yeah, and I think it just shows, you know, the strength of the show and how well they can tell a story, because they introduced this last episode, and we got, you know, the full arc of enough of explanation of why Paul would go, and moreover, why would we feel good about it, right? Like, you know, it's a little odd that, like, in an episode where, you know, he's being set up as, like, near death, which, I mean, it wasn't that bad. It could have been. I'm not undermining it. He wasn't portrayed as sympathetic at all, and that's because they're setting up this. They want us to feel good about what happened, and, you know, I did. A, because, yeah, I didn't really like him that much. And B, it seems to benefit the people that I do like. But, yeah, so I think, yeah, that it was a satisfying way to end. Because I got to say, I think Paul's act would have gotten really stale really quickly. Mm. Although it probably already did. Obviously, some of that's edited. If he had been more successful, we might have gotten better things out of him. But as you know, people have pointed out in our site, he was, you know, one of the big the people to really buy into the theme of the season. And that's annoying. So, yeah, I think in the end, it was a satisfying episode to see Paul go.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one with the whole, like, getting milk delivered by a drone thing, which is like, first of all, millennials can't afford same-day delivery. That's ridiculous. Then, but, like, does he think we don't go to grocery stores? And, like, why is he walking to the I'll walk to the grocery store if I happen to live walking distance to it, but not if I'm buying milk, because milk is heavy, because I buy it by the gallon, and I'm very small.
Not if you're Paul. He could lift two jugs as long as there's no balance beam.
Well, yeah.
Because then he'd need Chris. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, yeah, we both are, you know, relatively satisfied with it being Paul, and especially it not being Ken or David, which makes, I think, the question a little more difficult to answer of whether it was a good move to do that. Because I think, you know, it's obvious we're sort of like, yeah, it was a great move because we wanted it to happen. Yeah. But with all that and recognizing our bias, do you think it was a good move for Jessica and Sunday and the other person to flip the vote?
It's tricky because, like, a lot of people have been pointing out, like, well, who cares if, like, the boys went together because it's alliance of six and you're 3-3. And it's like, right, but I don't think that was the concern. I don't think it was like, yes, the boys in our six only might align with just those three. And then which it's like the issue, I think, why they were saying, why she brought it up is because the vote was Cece, you know, and like they just voted out a woman before. And, you know, Ken and David exist, even if they're not clicking with those guys. So that's why she's like, you guys aren't trying to do, like, an all, you know, all guys thing where you guys are just voting out the women, right?
Right, and why would you ever assume, like, these nine people are the last configuration until the merge?
Yeah. Like, so, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are down on it as a move. But I mean, and a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's not what he meant. Like, he didn't say what he meant. And I'm like, but that's the information she has. And the information she has is not like, oh, yeah, I would tell you, I would give you a heads up that they're talking about that. It's, oh, I would say you're on your own. That's not even an implication. That's saying, oh, yeah, if they wanted to do an all guys thing, that's what I would do. So, like, and here's the other thing. It's not like it was Chris or it's not like Paul is the super strong, really important in challenges type guy. Like Cece did terrible in that challenge. Sure. Yes. Walk very slowly. But that's also like, that's one of those things where it's like, oh man, they did so bad in that challenge, you know, like Darnell messed up with the goggles, so we better vote out. And it's like, that's not gonna like come up again. Or if it does, he will have learned from that mistake. Like, that is a fixable mistake. And
no, I mean, like, she did the task and she did it really poorly, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not, you know, same there, she lost that challenge.
Yeah.
But it's not like Paul excelled in it, you know. It's not like Paul's been excelling in anything. So yeah, from that perspective, no, I agree. In fact, like, I was a little bewildered when, you know, people were saying that it was a good move, and I think, yeah, the primary one was both, or bad move, sorry, Rob and Steven. And obviously, you know, they don't get the, you know, extra day of thinking about it as we do, which I've done nothing but else but think about this.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. That's all I've thought about.
But it's like, I don't think that was the only reason they flipped because of what Paul said. I think that was the straw that broke the back. I think they've been flipping around in their mind about, you know, the things that Ken had been saying to them, the things that they've been feeling themselves. If they were otherwise feeling like 50-50 valued partners in this alliance, then him saying that one thing, I don't think would have managed it. They would have been like, whoa. But maybe they would even go talk to Brad or Chris. I think that confirmed a feeling that they had, and that was that they were not equal members of this alliance. You know, the men folk got to go over here and talk strategy and then lay down the law of who it was going to be, and you guys got to go along with it. And, you know, pardon them for deciding, you know what, no, that's not what I came to Survivor to do. And I especially didn't do it for somebody of as little value as Paul. You know, it'd be one thing if he was out there like the actual real leader of the tribe and doing stuff. It's like, well, you know, that's the meat shield I want to hide behind. It's like,
yeah,
he's going to take us in directions we don't want to go. Maybe they weren't comfortable with the fact that they, you know, this whole 6-3 had been made so clear by, say, arrogant people like Paul. And that wasn't the way they wanted to play Survivor. They came to play for themselves. So, yeah, they went out there and took control of it. And, yeah.
It's also interesting to me, people have been very much being like, oh, it's Jessica's move. You know, Jessica did that. Jessica heard that and she made that decision. Jessica, Jessica, Jessica. And not, like, I think she's definitely, at least what we're seeing on TV, you know, is probably sort of the ringleader of the three women, at least, you know, again, at least what we're seeing, but a lot of that could just be that she found the legacy advantage, you know. But, like, we've seen situations where one person gets an idea and is like, oh, should we flip? Should we do that? And their alliance mates talk them down. And they're like,
yeah, but nah.
No, probably not. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, I can't, it's not coming to me, but, like, I know that's, you know,
oh, sure,
stuff that's happened. And, yeah, super common. So, like, obviously, like, Sunday and Lucy were, like, down.
Yeah, they heard that, and it's like, yeah, I've been feeling kind of hanky about this, too. And I do want to say, like, the Paula's misstep there, it's not, like, an invention of the show. It's not just, like, they picked up a really good moment and told the story there. They're in the bonus videos, Sunday brings it up. It's like, yeah. And then Paul said this to Jessica, so I do think it was a real turning point, but a turning point of, you know, feelings that had been creeping in. And, you know, some of it, I think, is Ken kind of pulling them aside. It's like, so what does Paul do around here again? Is that the way you feel? Enough to make them start thinking about it. And I do think that, you know, to your point, the fact that Sunday and Lucy turned so quickly from what was, you know, a very safe and easy vote to this, which, yeah, carries a good amount of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. I just think, uncertainty that is maybe worth it. It suggests, yeah, they weren't feeling appreciated enough in their lives. How the heck were the three of them talking so, you know, out in the open and away from the other, you know, members of their so strong core six alliance? As, you know, it's like, clearly, Brett and Chris were doing their own thing, and Paul's doing his own thing. That's not a very good alliance. So maybe they wanted to, flip it up and get an alliance more to their liking. Will it work out? I don't know, because it's a risk. But risk is okay if you feel like this person and this group that I had, because I threw it together and, you know, the first couple of days out of panic, maybe it's not the best one for me. Especially when you hear one of the members of that saying, yeah, you guys would be on your own if that ever happens. We're not doing it, but maybe. Like, it was especially Rich hearing Rob Cesarino call it out. So, like, that's like how you made your whole name, dude.
Right, the Alex being like, and he did say a little bit like that, at least he interpreted it the way that Paul said it, whereas I don't think Steven did. Not that this is like a know-it-all's reaction podcast, so we won't get into that too much, but that would be sad. But like, you know, it's Alex, like, it's not like Alex straight up was like, yes, I'm going to, like, here's the order of how things are going. It was more like, yeah, so Jen and Heidi are really close. So, like, if he gets down to it and, like, I want immunity, like, ugh, sucks for you, man. Like, and so he's like, oh, I don't enjoy that as an option, so I'm going to get rid of you.
Yeah, because, like, the alternative is if, you know, they say, oh, you know what, that's okay, Paul. It's three versus you three. And then you miss your opportunity. Now, I will say the one thing is, like, and I think the looking way down the line, which I think it's way too early for that. Mm-hmm. Paul is obviously a more desirable finals opponent than Ken is. So they have aligned with, you know, somebody who seems to be more likely to beat them. But I don't know. I imagine Chris would be equally, you know, imposing, especially if you're out there and you don't get to see the edit.
Use David as your finals guy.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe you just use the three of you and get somebody out against, you know, a pretty obvious target like Ken. So I think this is the segment of the episode we should talk about Ken. So what was the better part? Ken fishing, shirtless throwing things, talking about the richness and crispness of vinyl?
I know, I was like bummed when we got this footage of like Paul shirtless fishing, and I'm like, why see this when we could be seeing Ken do anything?
And then they gave you Ken, and that's why, see? It's a comparison, right? It's like, and here you go. In fact, like, I almost wonder if that, like, went into the makeup of the tribe, because it's, like, not a whole lot of lookers in that tribe. I know, it's just like, hey, make them look that much better. And, you know, I mean, far be it for me, you know, a dude in his late 30s who totally went to sea to, like, yeah, criticize other members of our generation. But, like, I feel like the past, you know, there was a few more silver foxes or, you know, like Melfi types to represent people my age. But then it's like Ken, who is, you know, barely Gen X, and then, you know, the WO people.
I mean, like, Savage and Terry, like, Cambodia, older version of them, are both, like, better than almost everyone else.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, it's just because of the concentration, right? Because it's, like, it's six people, really. You know, like is fine. He's got, probably, I haven't been looking because it can. How can you notice? Rachel, obviously, you know, is thick, and then Lucy's a bodybuilder. So it's usually just like those six types are probably spread out amongst two tribes. But I do feel, to almost skip ahead, it's like it's another example of the show like putting their thumb on the scales to really emphasize the difference between millennial and Gen X. It's like they were just so desperate to do young versus old that it's like, yeah, well, we got to make these particular group of slightly older people seem that much older. That's off topic. We should be talking about Ken. Because, I mean, not that, like, say, audio podcasting of other people speaking is the best medium delivery of Ken. But do you think the backlash is starting at all? You know, people are getting tired of the Ken?
Well, we know there's at least one in our community. And just know, Shark, we're all against you.
Yeah. You can leave any time.
There's a lot we agree on. You know, I know who your avatar is, for one, and I think a lot of our commenters don't. But, yeah, no, that Ken hate, Paul love will not stand.
That's right. You and your Poochie Santa can go die on your way back to your home planet.
I will say one thing about Ken that I think was very telling was during the tribal council when he, you know, does his whole wax poetic thing. Like, they show Brett looking like, oh, here it goes again. And, like, not to stereotype, but if Ken's not able to win over Brett, that's a bad sign.
Hey, look, he just might not be Brett's type. It's possible.
That's true. Right? That's people... Ken is everyone's type. We've talked about this.
I know, but I guess not. I will say
we have proof. The whole Kinsey scale.
The point of Brett, I think, laughing, actually, I do think was a little illuminating. And this, you know, might be the part of the one hater's ears perking up. I'm guessing this isn't the first time they've heard Ken go on and on a little bit more grandiosely than necessary about a topic. And especially if, you know, he's a guy that's not in your alliance. That could get tiresome, you know. Like, maybe it's a little like, you know, listen to Coach in a such much more palatable package. But and, you know, it also kind of goes hand in hand with the thing that I've theorized that, you know, he just kind of makes the feel, you know, a little bit smaller being in his presence. I can get that. Ego is a thing. It's why, you know, there's no Kens on this podcast. I just feel weird about it.
While you were talking, I thought of, like, a very dirty joke, and now I've been laughing to myself about it the whole time. Continue.
You can share. This is
a podcast. Oh, you said, you know, a more palatable package. And I put my package in it.
Phrasing! But perhaps the most Ken of the moments, because he's not just a pretty face or a palatable package, would be when he was, you know, opening up his soul about the harmful Ken doll comments.
Yeah, I mean, that was funny. Because, like, I mean, I get it. Like, because I feel like as a kid, when that's happening, it's not like, oh, you're attractive and your name is Ken. It's just, oh, your name is Ken and Ken is a doll. Like, I don't think it's like, the way the millennials are doing it is like, wow, who is this, like, Greek god? And, oh, wow, his name's Ken, how funny. That's perfect. Like, I don't think that's what was happening on the schoolyard.
I suspect he probably didn't have the abs at the time. I'm just throwing that out there.
Probably not. I did definitely laugh, like, out loud when he was like, you know, and the worst thing you can be called as a boy is, like, a doll with no penis. And it's just like, I mean, I guess, yeah, that fragile masculinity.
Oh, it's accurate, I imagine. Like, look at Toy Story 3 and all the stuff that Ken had to deal with. The actual Ken doll. It's like, I'm not a girl's toy!
Plus, then he and Barbie broke up.
Yeah, it's like, you need to recognize my masculinity because it's so, you know, fragile, as you say. No, it's great because we get, like, all of, like, you know, the woe is me, outcast, nerdy, you know, backstory. But in a package that looks a lot better than, say, Cochran. So, yeah, I like this. I like this new form of nerd that they've, this damaged young boy that they presented to us. It's like the movie version of that character. I was like, oh, we'll cast you.
It's Rachel Lee Cook as the, like, horrible outcast.
Exactly. I don't want to watch actual nerds.
Although I will defend She's All That. weirdly briefly in the middle of this podcast, just in the sense that at least, like, they made her weird. It wasn't like, whoa, she's so ugly. It's like, I saw that in real life. And, like, even in middle school, like, I remember thinking, like, of certain friends, I'm like, huh, they're actually, like, very pretty, but nobody pays attention to them because they're, like, the nerdy kids and they're, like, not actually, so they're not popular. But, like, you should be doing a lot better than you are. Yeah. And, you know, Rachel Lee Cook was wearing overalls and painted all the time and was weird. So that's...
And she needed corrective for her vision. So.
And everyone knows if you need glasses, that's just disgusting.
Yeah, no, nobody ever wants to see that four eyes.
My appeal went way down after I got glasses.
Yeah, it was a reverse Rachel Lee Cook. She's not that.
Yeah. Oh, God, she seemed okay, but now it's disgusting.
Ah-ha! It's like that Seinfeld episode with the lighting. That's a Gen X show that you wouldn't know at all. All right, so, you know, obviously the story that's been told for the past two episodes, the battle between Ken and Paul for, you know, control of the tribe and how Paul's leadership is, you know, going against, you know, Ken's vibe. How much do you think it's actually legitimate that Paul was, you know, this larger-than-life figure that was getting in the way? And how much of it do you think it's just because, like, Paul and Ken just didn't get along?
I feel like it's, like, a little column A, a little column B. Because I feel like, I mean, I feel like Paul and Ken definitely don't get along just because I feel like they're such different people. Plus, in a season all about age and generation, they are the farthest apart on that track.
They're basically a generation apart. Yeah, yes.
Because, let's be real, Ken is 33. Every definition I have read of millennials puts him as an older millennial. This season is bullshit. But, sorry, I know you're trying not to edit this podcast.
Right, I won't.
Sorry, kids.
Oh, and you, somebody walks through the door. No. Exactly.
Okay. Ken is 33. Paul's what, like 52?
I think 51 or 52, something like that.
52, yeah. And so that's like, think about like Will and, you know, the now departed Mari. Will is 18, Mari is 31. Like, and that sounds like a huge gap, right? And like, wow, how could they possibly relate to each other? And that's the same. Paul and Ken are possibly, I think, farther. Math is really hard.
They're farther apart than Will and Mari, yes.
Like, thank Paul you, is, yes, they are farther apart.
Paul is literally old enough to be his father. And yeah, obviously, like, yeah, it's not impossible for people of different ages to get along in Survivor, no matter what this theme Mike wants you to know about. But I think not that one actually... Yeah, I think it actually might speak to a bit of the reason why Ken has, you know, been on the bottom. Like, it's so weird that, like, you know, a freaking god like Ken is like, he's not fitting in. It's because these aren't his people. I doubt he hangs out with a lot of these old people. I thought he was doing that when he was, you know, wakeboarding in Hawaii or whatever. I mean, obviously, he, you know, he's a dad now, but he's not, you know, a dad to grown-up children.
And yet, like, he's basically, like, even though the daughter's older, he's basically, like, a new dad. Like, they don't have any because that wouldn't fit in their theme, but half of those millennials could totally be parents, like, age-wise. And it wouldn't even be weird. Like, Michelle,
it'd be horrifying, though, with these particular millennials.
Yes, but, like, age, you know, Michelle and Zeke are 28, Mari was 31, like...
Sierra is a millennial.
Yeah, like...
And a mother of two. It's granted, obviously not possible.
Granted, she, you know, started early, but still. Like, you don't have to... I don't know, having it doesn't necessarily, I don't even remember what I was saying anymore, I'm sorry.
No. I'll say, like, can't get back to the theme, it's like, I think it's that could speak to the tension between those two, because I think Paul, amongst them, everyone there, was most invested in this whole old people doing it this way, and young people that way, and, you know, Ken is probably more like, that way ain't so bad, you know, to the point, like, we saw that in the first episode, right?
Exactly. Where,
you know, when Paul is like, let's tell some stupid, you know, millennial jokes. That'll be, you know, a great weekly segment for a podcast. Ken was, yeah, saying, hey, maybe let's, you know, just chill and, you know, respect people and treat them like the competition that they are. And I think that might speak to why getting rid of Paul was so important, because he might be kind of like the Philip figure in the cast, and that, you know, everything is going to be this way. It's going to be old people, work ethic, not out there gaming and all of that. Not that I think Ken is necessarily a big gamer, but like shutting down conversation, this six is all we need. And let's keep, you know, being the grumpy old people, because he's an old person. So much more. So I think, yeah, those are probably reasons. So I do think some of it was legitimate, because I do think Paul was probably being a bit of lording over people with his position, because if he wasn't, I don't think the women would have flipped. So there's some evidence in that aspect. Let's flip it to the big hyped thing for the episode. Next week on, and all the commercials throughout, we got a summit. That was sure worth advertising, huh?
Yeah, that was lame as hell.
That was nothing. That was nothing. So that wasn't anything. And obviously, they won't know that it's nothing when they decide to do it, but it was nothing.
That was like some old school Survivor stuff.
Yeah, like even an old school Survivor, when they'd have stuff like that, there'd be an agenda. You guys are going to go do this and talk about this or structure this. Usually it's about the structure and a pending merge or, you know, a swap that's coming up. But it's like, they just like, hey, get together, hang out, and have some sandwiches. Like, there was nothing, there was no purpose.
There was nobody found, like, a clue that they had to give to someone else. There was not, like, there was, you know, it wasn't like, oh, one of you will stay behind. Like, I don't know. It was such garbage.
Yeah, this is terrible. Basically the equivalent of, like, when, I believe in Guatemala, like, one of the tribes just rode a boat up to the other tribe.
Right. They had, like, a pool party.
Yeah, yes, that was it. Yeah. In their little pool without the crocodiles. That's all this was. And it was just like, God, that was useless. And I understand maybe they try and like, oh, let's, you know, kind of get the generations together in a social situation, blah, blah, blah. But for one, don't market it. It was nothing. It was less than nothing. For two, no, like, give them something to do. Because what did we get out of this? We got David yet again pledging fealty to anybody within a couple minutes.
Terrible that it was taped. Like, I was like, no, David, there are so many better matches for you out there.
Now, I'm glad you latched on to the power and thought that
don't
is
Don't give your love away to the first guy who smiles at you.
He's been
the one is out there.
Yeah, and then it's like, it's all so he could set up as a maybe in the future, these people will help me take down Paul. Oh, wait, yeah, that's nothing. So,
that was a good, like, I think that was a good move on their part, how they did that. But, David and Cece for being like, yeah, Paul is, like, not actually bad-mouthing him even and being like, yeah, we hate Paul. But, like, being like, yeah, he's not on the apps. He is in charge and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, putting a bit more of a target on him and maybe helping ease the obvious one that's on their alliance partner, Ken. But like that was just nothing. Look, something could come from it, you know. Yeah, no scene ever makes Survivor unless it means something down the road. But, so I can't fully judge it, but it's just like, I can certainly judge the next time on Survivor. Like, make your advertising about, like, the fight with Anna. Make it about the battle between Ken and Paul, or Dave and Paul. Don't make it about eating peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, that is something I do every day. It is not interesting.
Well, that's how we're going to hype this episode of this podcast. Two people will get together. And eat sandwiches. I would never get together to eat with you, though. Real talk.
That's fair.
So we'll leave the summit and go back to. We'll go to the other tribe, the millennials. So after some time calming down, not in the middle of the night when they're angry, Adam approaches Michaela to let her know, the lay of the land. What did you think of his approach?
I mean, you know, it was logical, and like she doesn't like Figgy, and like. This is another thing, I mean, not to, again, I don't want this to be like a recap of know-it-alls, because that's stupid, but...
Here we are.
Really didn't, like, I found that was weird, where he's like, I will say, Stephen put about, like, being the fifth in, like, a tight four, like, when it's tight pairs can be good, but I don't know, like, Jay
I don't get the
Michelle
impression that she's the fifth.
Yeah, first of all, but, like... And Jay and Michelle, I don't think, are even really a pair. They're just the ones with a brain and not making out. Like, that is a marriage of convenience, if there ever was. Like, it's, you know, it's called the Triforce. Like, Jay came with Taylor. Like, he is Taylor's bro, and Figgy is the girl. That's it. Like, they would go as a final three. Like, they would, it would not be, Jay ain't, like, drawing rocks for Michelle. Not that that happens at the final four anyway, but, like, did not, like, he's not going to force a tiebreaker. They would just vote Michelle out. That's what would happen. So you don't need to have that fifth person, you know, to be the side person. And, like, yeah, sure, having a type four is all well and good in this beginning stuff, but if you're trying to build a new alliance, there's no reason the rest of them can't become type. Like, yeah, they can be friends.
Speaking quickly of rocks, goddamn the Gen X tribe for being so boring that we didn't get to see them drawing rocks, which almost certainly were purple, right?
They were definitely purple.
Like, is it so freaking hard for you guys wants to bring purple rock back into the, like, the mainstream lexicon?
It's so rude.
I know. But you know what? That way only the people that know will know the ref. Yeah. Yeah, this is, you know, like,
the
our
best,
speakeasy,
the best,
you know.
Thing.
But I didn't really like the way Adam was handling it. You know, obviously it's the move you do when you talk to her, but I feel like he was talking at her a bit too much.
That might just
strategizing
be
in Survivor's difficulty. Yeah, I know. Right, look at them there. But and strategizing is tough. You have limited time and all of that, but that's why it's important to, you know, praise the people that do it well. Because it gave me a bit of a vibe of, like, a friendlier version of the way Nick approached people last year.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, even if what you're saying is completely accurate and logical, you're making me feel like you think I'm stupid by the saying it the way you are. And screw you, buddy. I'm not going to do it. And then if I, you know, sit back and a bunch of other things kind of break my way, I can win Survivor. Like, that's how it works, right?
Also, like, one thing, too, that I was thinking, and I don't know, people probably won't agree with this, but, like, I feel like, on the one hand, you don't want to be doing everything last minute. But on the other hand, considering that they thought they had a plan and that plan changed at the end because people go with the last thing they heard, like, maybe wait till you lose a challenge.
Yeah, I think, like,
let Figgy annoy her more. Mm-hmm. Let them clash more. Let her remember why she doesn't like Figgy. Don't do it right after when, like, things are maybe okay. And, like, yeah, that vote went well, and we had 7-3, so now it's 7-2. I'm fine for a while. You know, let those cracks form. Give it a chance.
Or, like, you plant some seeds, but you don't necessarily need to walk somebody through the whole strategy. And don't you see it? And if you don't see it, just kind of like, huh, they all seem to be hanging out a lot. Huh, it's weird that we're here, you know. Just
it's
that
like
sort
what
of
Ken
thing.
Did with about Paul.
Yeah.
He wasn't really going, at least that we saw, wasn't really being like, we need to get together. You girls need to flip so we can vote at Paul. Those boys, you know, they're going to be together. They're a tight three. They're going to turn against you. They might recruit you because that wouldn't make sense. Like, it's just sort of like, wow, Paul, you know, he always talks about going out fishing, but does he ever bring any?
Here we go.
Does he ever bring anything back? Hi.
Hi. Hello, Christopher. You really need to go to sleep sometimes. We got your naps are your problem. Do you want to say hi, Christopher?
Yes.
You want to say hi to Emily?
Hi.
Hi, Christopher.
Who's your favorite survivor?
Superman.
Superman, I think, would win most of the challenges.
Yeah.
He'd be a target, but I think he'd always be immune. Unless,
those are
you
my
know.
Superman pajamas, Christopher.
Yes, my
dear. Yes.
Do you have any questions, Christopher?
Pikachu.
Pikachu, that's a good question.
Pikachu. Mm-hmm.
All right, are you going to go to bed now?
Yes.
Okay, good night, buddy.
Good night.
Sleep tight.
Look at that. Usually we get this done earlier in the podcast, and then he makes a second appearance. So I think this is good. We got that one.
Might be good to go. Oh. Anyway, sorry.
That's all right. What were we talking about?
Anyway, you know, I can't resist. What were we? Oh, I like. letting, like,
just Ken the way that Ken was doing it. Yeah. She's talking to Jessica's like, how many fish has Paul caught? And she's like, kind of like, oh yeah, I guess it's kind of zero, isn't it? So
then you do the like, wow, yeah, I mean, man, Taylor and Figgy, that's getting deeper. Like, wow, they really hang out with Jay and Michelle a lot too. And if you really want to, like, it seems like they're bringing in Will, you know, hanging out with Will or whatever, like, just, you know.
That seems like a tight fivesome. Like, just some of that, and maybe, hopefully, you can tag team, right? And Zeke, almost like, not even like you're, like, pushing it to Michaela, but you're just kind of talking amongst the people, and you guys kind of throw it back, and it's like, oh. And then later, maybe you have that conversation. But, yeah, I feel like he was pushing the cell a bit too much, and, you know. It could be fine, but I do think that it will require a bit smoother a touch if he wants to be successful. Because, you know, it's important to note that, you know, he wasn't successful in his first attempt. So clearly there's probably flaws in his abilities to, you know, get people on board. And I think this is a flaw that a lot of people sometimes have that are like, you know, super fans, strategic players. It's like other people will behave in the way that I behave and think of things through rationally. But you have to... other people are motivated by different reasons, and just kind of, you know, compare that to the way, say, Michelle was able to operate.
Right, and that's one thing that could be good about the fact that he did get started a little earlier, and they didn't go to tribal council and stuff, is that they have time to forget about that happening, and, you know, maybe it'll work as a seed if they don't go to tribal again for, like, six more days or something like that.
Yeah, it's like you're on the bottom. People are expecting you to just speak in self-interested ways. So
that's
the
way you can pull in Hannah, you know, since she wants to work with you, since she's someone who's allegedly in with the group. Yeah. If she starts talking about it, maybe.
Yeah, and clearly she's so ride or die that you need her. No. Let's jump back or to the end there. Jeff Probst's thoughts on the, you know, texting habits of generations. That was just a brilliant moment of television, right?
There were so many things I hated about it. For one, Jeff, I don't know what 20-something do you text anymore, but we all stopped using you as an abbreviation in, like, middle school. Like, once we stopped having to use T9 word, like, and had real keyboards on our phones, like all of my friends, like, there are certain abbreviations you use, and some of it's, like, ironic, you know, but, like, you'll use, like, it's acronyms, it's not, like, shortened words.
Yeah.
It's what's still used.
Well, it's also the same, like, the whole thing I've been arguing this whole time is, like, yeah, you keep making this about millennials as though Generation X was never on ICQ, man.
Right, like, yeah, like, I mean, when people I know, like, cause there was definitely a time where I definitely, you know, typed like that, but that was literally, like, middle school. That was, like, 8th grade when we were chatting on AIM, like, on AOL Instant Messenger, you know? It wasn't, which is something that I think your people used, too.
Right, like, we're the most entrepreneurial generation of all time. We invented all this internet stuff that you're railing against on your show.
Yeah, and, like, texting, like, yeah, when we all had to hit the same button, like, 4 times to get to a, you know, maybe you would.
But, then, like, it actually is more efficient. Congratulations, yeah. Jeff Brown.
Well, once you have keyboard, like, I don't even like to use the predictive text iPhones app because I feel like it's slower for me. Like, I can just type quicker. Even my mom, who is a baby boomer, you know, who is 65, and sorry, Mom, she doesn't know this exists, so we're fine. But, you know, she even texted me this morning because she knew I'd watched the episode late. Was like, she's like, I know old people who use U, like the letter U, and young people who don't. And I'm like, yeah. Like, I remember in high school when I was babysitting, by that point I was already not texting that way. And the mothers of the kids I babysat for, they texted like that. And you know what generation they are from? X. Generation X.
Yeah, I know. And, like, what makes it more annoying is, you know, that this is Jeff's ham-handed way of trying to force this theme. And, you know, before the season ever started, you know, as last season was ending, you know, it's just like, this is going to be awful. This is going to be awful as I keep trying to make these discussions about generations. And that was the most egregious episode, or example of it. And it's as I was getting to earlier, I do think that they really were interested in you know, showing the difference between ages to the point where I think the motivation, and some of this is in like Probst preseason chats and all that, is to be more millennial. So I think they focused on the millennials. We need more millennials applying. There's not enough. And also, you know, like that's like an easy way to draw clicks and stuff in the internet, right? Is do some stupid piece about millennials. Either, you know, some New York Times trend piece of how they're awful, or, you know, BuzzFeed quiz type thing. But, you know, it's a buzzword that'll work. So that's where they put their thought. That's why that tribe is so much more interesting. And then for Gen X, I don't think they thought about it at all. They just old. But not so old. They can't be as old as Nicaragua. We want some 30s and, you know, younger 40s. But they also all need to seem kind of old and cranky. Like, where's, like, the 30-year-old web person? You know, like they try to act like this is a mystery to the generation who invented and grew up on it. That's our thing, you goddamn millennials. Like,
hey, it's not that our fault. It's the Generation X people who made the damn show.
I know, yeah. And what's great about it is Jeff Probst gathers the old folk around. And yeah, and he's going to tell you how the young people today think. Because he's older than Paul. Jeff Probst is 2 years older than Paul. So yes,
which, like, it's some devil witch magic if you look at those two side by side.
I know, but it's like, you be the voice of the young people, Jeff, and educate us about what they're like. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. And I'm talking so loud that I've got a visitor again. Do I need to be more quiet? The theme of the season is really bothering me, Superman.
I'm Superman.
You're not Superman?
I'm Superman.
All right. Good night, Christopher. This is what happens when I rant.
Simmer down, Andy. Simmer down.
Take it down. Babies are trying to sleep. But not really. They're trying to stay awake, so they don't sleep.
Maybe that's the dream when you're three.
I know. It's really, you need to understand that sleeping is awesome. That's an old person thing to say. But I do think, like, you know, just so they could really do this millennial stuff, they couldn't get any 30-year-olds that are also, you know, like, on Reddit or whatever. You know, like, I mean, this goddamn podcast is run by two old people, and, you know, we're doing all this stuff. Like, it's the differences shouldn't be that drastic, but no, they had to get like Midwestern lawyer type, and they had to get, you know, 50, yeah, is he even Gen X really? Poochie Santa. They had to get, you know, like a farm girl lawyer, you know, Midwestern, you know, all lovely folks.
But, yeah, like, they keep talking about how they worked with their hands, and I'm like, that's not a Gen X thing. Like, have you seen Office Space?
We're the middle children of history, man. Like, we're the ones that, like, talked about the McJob. So, yeah, they don't care about Gen X. It's what they should have really done, but they needed that millennials buzzword to get, you know, people talking about them in other media, because it's, you know, as a show that's been around for two decades, nobody really talks about it anymore. It should have just been, like, generation gap. And then, yes, you have your stupid young people, and you can get all the millennials you want, but then you're not setting up this false dichotomy of we're going to call it Gen X, but not let it be like Gen X at all, and really make them seem so much older than, you know, they should be.
Right.
And that's led, you know, to this season feeling like such an imbalance, and not in the way that, you know, like Nicaragua was an imbalance that, like, these people are near the grave and these people are young, but more they chose a bunch of dull-ass old people because they wanted them to seem older.
Yeah. It's, I mean, one of the worst parts about Mari going home is the fact that we won't have, like, at the merge, her and Ken connecting. I'm like, they are 2 years apart. I mean, at least Ken's only, like, 5 years older than Zeke and Michelle, so at least we have that, but, like...
And, like, David just, isn't that much older, right?
I think that's, he's, like, 42.
Is he?
Yeah,
but, you know, I just assume he's immature because he writes for Family Guy.
Which is weird because I didn't think they'd let a manatee play on the show, but there you go. I mean, he's skinny for a manatee. It's weird.
Actually, so that rant kind of leads into our first mailbag question of the week. This one comes in from our friend MN Scout and BK, who is
Ken's making, number one fan.
Yeah, is making this season so much more delightful than it even is on its own.
I don't know what we'd do without her.
Yeah, honestly, maybe the show would be more dull. What Survivor themes were the most successful and least? And then within our answer, she wants to know, do you think they impacted gameplay or just the sound bites, just the TV show itself? For now, I'll let you go first with what you think was the most successful.
Okay, so a little tricky. I'm going to start not necessarily with what I think is the most successful, but just on something I find interesting. So as a theme, Race Wars was a terrible idea. Don't do that. That's weird. No, they did not call it Race Wars. Of course, we call it that. But, you know, awkward. And yes, it almost destroyed everything in the sense that they were worried, like, oh, God, all the white people are winning.
Are going to systematically eliminate the minorities, which would be the best reflection of America in itself. But, you know,
that's the thing. People talk about the sexism in Survivor, and it's like, yeah, it's really just the sexism in society. So, you know, tug collar. That's not buttoned, so that's useless. But on the other hand, like, we are definitely Cook Island supporters here. And it, you know, doing that thing made a much more diverse cast. Yeah, sure, people point to Fiji, but Fiji was supposed to also be Race Wars until they realized that was a terrible idea. It also, you know, once they maybe gamed the system a little bit, it ended up with a great narrative of the not-white people taking over the white people. It was great, because suck it, Candace and Adam, you're terrible. You, Adam.
And like Ross Wolf on our site talked about this a bit, and, you know, really pointed out. It's like, yeah, it not only, like, made them more diverse, but it allowed those minorities to operate in a place of, you know, normality, right? Like, their being minorities didn't separate them. That didn't create the otherness that so often leads to first boots. And I think it did lead to a few good scenes, as, you know, pointed out you know, we had the interesting discussion of how Asian feel this pressure to, you know, like, represent their race and, that sort of thing. And then you had, all the awkwardness of the white people, which I think leads to why there's such an uproar about that season or that idea, the theme, is despite the fact that race is, like, a defining characteristic of American society, white people really don't like to talk about it. And I think, to your point of, like, why it's a bad idea, maybe this, you know, not so nice competitive competition maybe not the format. It forced, where you're forced to eliminate people from the, you know, weakest of
maybe like things. Amazing Race, where it's the game that eliminates them or something. Also, of course, there's the problem where, you know, just only having four categories and the like confusion of like, is, you know, is like Latino / Hispanic, like, even, you know, and all the, like, it's different for African-American in the sense that, like, assuming you've been here for a while, the actual culture was raised because they were enslaved. But, like, whereas Hispanic, like, different countries have different cultures and maybe, like, and same with Asian. Like, they didn't have any Indian, you know, South Asian people, Middle Eastern.
No race is monolith, but Asian itself is like, that's a bunch of different races.
Yeah. And then even within that, which is actually was kind of interesting, even within the Asian tribe, you know, Yul and Becky were like, oh, we're both Korean, and like bonded over that. Yeah. Which shows that you really need to, they need to do that season again, but with like 10 tribes.
There shows why, you know, Survivor just can't do it. Even try to do it, you try to, like, do something like, we're going to really, you know, this is a show where we like to talk about making new societies. And, you know, again, nothing is more definitional of American society than the blending of various races and cultures. But this isn't the format to discuss this. This is a format where, this is a show where, you know, you plot against people to vote them out. That's why we call it Race Wars as a joke, because, you know, this isn't like a TLC series where everybody just kind of learns to get along. You know, this isn't Kid Nation, for Christ's sake. This is, you know, Survivor, so it's not good there. But also, as you pointed out, all the hashtag problematic, you know. Oh, what about this race? What about this race, you know? So then it's just, like, becomes this whole thing, and then it just, it's a bad look. And then again, because, Yeah, white people really just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's even all this stuff with it. You know, you've got Penner is Jewish, and, like, I think I remember seeing Shireen on Twitter wondering, like, if that was the reason why he was outcast, which I think it was because he was old. Everyone else on that tribe.
Yeah, a bunch of young douchebags and him. Plus, yeah, we've seen more than once Penner be able to make people feel a little uneasy in his presence. It's one of his gifts.
We have a larger sample size there. But,
but I think the larger point is, that's not the worst theme they've ever had, because, you know, there were good outcomes because of it. Outcomes that we haven't gotten to see replicated. No minority groups have done as well as they did in that season. Not even in Fiji, when, you know, they had to back off of the, you know, divided by race concept, A, because, you know, they barely survived the last one, and B, because, you know, one of the, you know, white competitors left the game right before it started. They had no backups.
White people.
I know, the worst, really. But then you get a case where so they, you know, they have very diverse things, and then right away, you know, Dreams and Cassandra are otherized. So it's just like it's and that's, you know, when we talk about it, it's difficult because diversity can't just mean we have a few non-white people, but forcing them into, you know, separation. You know, we're going to have divorce by having separate by equal locations. That's probably not it either. So I say the most successful theme for me was Second Chances.
Yes, I wasn't even thinking about those, like the All-Star seasons as themes. But yeah, Second Chances was great.
Because, yeah, obviously for one, letting us, you know, be part of the, you know, participation and, you know, voting in, that was tremendous fun and a great reward for fans in general. But also, I think, you know, by centering it around, this is my second chance, I really want to do well, I have regrets from before, that's a good theme to build around. And obviously, you know, it does get a little tiresome, you know, the 50th time somebody's like, my second chance, but that's something real. That's a real thing with real consequences that it's interesting to hear about. And it's personal. It's not just some invented, you know, Jeff says I'm no color because I have a disability. Like, yeah, you know, these people are legitimate about wanting a second chance. Most of them, anyway. And this other thing, like, the best people, at least going in, the ones I was most excited about, were the ones that felt like this was their last chance. Like, they were lucky. Mm-hmm. This is something they've wanted for a while to correct something that's haunted them. And a lot of them probably started to think, like, it wasn't going to happen for me. And because of the voting, wasn't sure it was going to happen for them, you know?
Right.
In a way, like, not all of them. Like, so, like a Shireen or a Spencer, probably, like, yeah, like, I'm coming back at some point. It's just a matter of when. But even they...
Spencer and Joe weren't sweating.
Yeah. But even they had, like, you know, I need to do better than last time in a way that other All-Star seasons might not have, because, you know, there's some winners, right? Like, what do I need to do better? So I think that was the best theme they ever had, and I think it did help gameplay. I know there's also some people that, you know, fight over that. It's like, oh, the big moves. Everybody needs to do big moves. Like, why do you hate fun? It's more fun when people on this show are active participants. Maybe it's a little less fun when, you know, bartender travel agents sit back and hope things break their way.
We all know Kim was great and is one of, you know, we all bow before her, but we also all know One World wasn't good.
Yeah, but also she was active. She was doing things.
Yeah,
you know?
She was. No one else was.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, and like, is it the best way to play always? I don't care. You know, like, it will be for one of them. It was for Jeremy, who, yeah, interestingly, didn't do that many big moves. But it's better TV when more people are trying to do things. And I think because they all carried that stain and that regret, they were going to do more. Not every single one of them. There's still going to be people who lay back. But that's for my answer. You got a real answer?
Well, what I was going to say, because I totally wasn't even thinking of, like, Heroes versus Villains and Second Chances as, like, options. So, Heroes versus Villains was really fun. We talked about that a little bit this summer.
Is evergreen content. You guys can all go watch that after this.
Yeah. So I'll say, not counting those, I thought Blood versus Water as a half All-Star season is, like, the best way you can do a half All-Star season, I think. You know, fans' favorite is just stacked two against them. even though Blood versus Water did still have the three returnees at the end, I think that's the most even you can make it, like, because they're at least they're familiar with the show. Then, and
it's the best way to do a bad concept.
Yes. And so that was more compelling. I think the issue, you know, with Sam Wendell Serve is just sort of casting. I feel like if they just tried a little harder, you know, they could probably pull that off if they, like, really were willing to go for pairs and not, like, someone who's great who brought someone and their plus one.
Yeah. But that probably speaks to how difficult casting is in the first place. It's hard enough to find one person that's great. Now I got to find somebody that's related to them somehow, and so that both halves are great. That might just be impossible. Like a show that does that every season, called The Amazing Race. Right. When I watched it, frequently wasn't able to get two halves that, like, exciting. Sometimes they were. And in fact, usually when they were, it's people that weren't related to each other.
Right. It's like, we're best friends and we get along because we're both zany.
Yeah. Not like, you know, this is the brother that, you know, mom and dad always liked better. Worst. What do you think of the worst theme?
Haves and have nots. Young versus old.
Yep. There we go. That's the correct answers right there.
Those are it.
It's idiotic to start your season with imbalances that will make it, you know, competitively uninteresting. Who knew? You know, it's almost like when movies are casting, like, sports things, they don't make, like, one awesome team and one sucky team. It's, like, as much as, you know, we on this show and people on the internet maybe not be focused on the fact that, you know, the challenge is all that, it's actually a big part of the show and how the narrative is driven, because the teams that lose are on it more. And when you win, you don't have to do as much. And when you set something so that one tribe has a superior advantage because they're better fed or better slept or, you know, 20 years younger, that matters.
Yeah, that's...
And then that's it. Those are the right answers. Sorry, not anything interesting. I mean, one that, you know, like a dark horse terrible theme is what you touched upon. You know, people that know how to play Survivor versus people that don't, because it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same. You know, you give one side an incredible advantage, it's a little less interesting. Who knew? It's almost like people don't tune in to watch sporting events in large numbers between, like, super good teams and super bad teams. All right, let's move on to our next mail question. This one comes from Mike Hirsch, and this is related to Taylor. He's saying, with Taylor plumbing the depths of dimness this season, who's your favorite dumb Survivor contestant and why? And his answer here was that he thinks Eddie will be a popular choice because we are the people that like to talk about the dog bar day.
Which Matt named. Never forget.
He will never let us forget. No. But he personally says Carter, who, even though he's not 100% certain that he was dumb, although he's pretty sure he was, he doesn't know, have a lot of justification liking Carter best, other than he aligned himself with Penner and had tiny eyes. And I think, you know, that actually sets up a little thing before, like, a little ground rules to put it in here. We don't know if these people are genuinely dumb. I mean, some of them we probably do. But it's more like, who was coded dumb by the show?
Right.
Who was the dumb character? Now, I do want to, like, as a word of caution, you already have your answers, so I didn't caution you about this, but I mean, the best part of these questions are the conversations that we will start in the comments below. We need to be cautious of, this person is dumb because they talk funny. Because they talk in the regional accent of where they're from.
Yeah.
We're better than that. But there still might be some answers to answer around that. So they need to be dumber than just having an accent, is all I'm saying. So who did you get?
They might be both. Well, you know, I just want to say a little bit of that. I also really enjoyed Carter, but I never really thought of him as being dumb. I enjoyed Carter in the sense that it was like, he was so boring that he, like, flipped all the way back around to being, like, a meme, and it was amazing. I mean, there was this sauce will live on in my memory for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And it was like, he's just about to talk. Nope, it's over. It's over.
It was just, and, you know, he hung out with Jeff Kent, who, as a Giants fan, I both love and hate. So, like, that was fun. Yeah.
Don't you hate when sports forces you to like somebody you previously hated?
Well, for this, it was more
I guess
the
it's the
opposite.
Other way around, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then, but now they're, like, letting him come to Giants things again. So it's like, wait, do we like him again? I'm very confused. I, like, feel like I need to find out how Dodgers fans feel about him so I know how I can feel about him. Anyway.
Maybe it could be the one thing that unites you guys, you know, that, like, we don't agree on anything except that Jeff Kent is a massive douchebag.
Well, there is that. Actually, generally, Giants and Dodgers fans, it used to be agreeing on hating the Phillies, but now the Phillies are garbage. Sorry, Matt. So now it's typically hating the Cardinals together. We both hate the Cardinals.
Sure, but that's not, like, a unique thing there. That's a unique thing to all, like right-minded people.
But it's also funny because they hate the Cardinals because they always lose to the Cardinals in the postseason, and we hate them because we always beat them. And also, they're the Cardinals, and they're
you guys are so close to finding middle ground there, but you just ruined it. So yeah, I know. I mean, and actually, the thing with Carter is it kind of shows like Survivor will never be as bad as it used to be simply because it's so much fun to talk about. So yeah, you're saying like Carter himself wasn't that interesting, but he became a meme and joke amongst us. That's extra textual, and I agree. Like this season, even if it ends up being like the Nicaragua 2 that I doomsday predicted, I'll have so much more fun watching it. It does like because you know this thing and the people commenting and stuff. So you know whether Carter himself was dumb
for Ken,
whether he was good, I don't know. But we had fun with him, which is probably kind of speaking to what Mike Hirsch's question's about. I need a ruling before I give my answer because I'm not sure. Does Keith Nail qualify? It kind of gets into that thing I talk about. It's like, just because they talk funny, not dumb, but you still get those moments of Keith kind of walking in the background shots or, like, Jeremy trying to get his attention or, like...
That was so good. And that was live in the room. That moment was insane.
Keith, like, side alliances.
I guess I'll go back to the how. You know, yeah, I think he's qualified because it's not in a way that Wes, his son, who also has an accent and who maybe isn't, like... he's not an academic, you know, doesn't, because Wes watched the show and had a rough understanding. Mm-hmm. Keith was there because Wes was there, you know, and then Keith was an interesting character, so they brought him back. Like, you know, side alliance. So he's not necessarily dumb, like, as a person in the real world, but was ignorant of Survivor and therefore was dumb.
Yeah, like, I think that was kind of the code of, like, hey, get a load of this, you know, delightful rube, you know? It's Keith Nail. Keith Nail is awesome. Keith Nail is great. Beloved. If he doesn't count, I was going to go with Kat.
Kat's a good one, too.
I know I'll say for me, it's tough because... I don't typically like the dumb character, right? Like, that's just not the vibe I'm on. But she has given us a lot, right? Like, from the touche to the, you know, worrying that she contacted appendicitis to...
nobody wants to date anyone who doesn't make the merge, which I guess that turned out to be true.
At least they'll date you for a little bit. Exactly.
They'll do stuff.
So, yeah, she gave us too much. So she's on my list, too. Did you have anybody else?
Kat was who I also had in mind. That I talked about Eddie. I didn't, you know, like the dog bar was funny, but like I don't even like. It's been discussed. I'm not really a dog person, so that's not like endearing to me. That's just stupid. Like, cool drinking and dogs. That's somewhere I'm not going to go ever. I'm trying to even think. I mean, yeah, I know who's not your favorite, which would be Sean from Borneo, because he makes you angry for being so dumb.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's why it's not really my thing, because generally when I see stupid people, they just frustrate me. Like, how are you so stupid?
Yeah, that's how I feel, too. I could never be a teacher. I'm too impatient for it. Like, I would just get... I'd be like, but it's so obvious why you're so dumb.
Yeah, it's like the reason why I don't like Nicaragua, because almost all of those people were stupid. So, and even the people that weren't were. Yeah, and that's why I'm not, you know, everybody thinks San Juan del Sur is his gem of the season. You know, no, it was a bunch of stupid people doing stupid things. But, you know, Keith Nail is pretty delightful, especially, you know, in his second turn. One of the best themes ever in Second Chances. So that's all that we have. Oh, did you have something?
I was just doing the snapping again.
Keith Nail, like, not paying attention. So those are the mailbag questions that we had for this week. I actually did get a couple of others, but I'm saving them for when John can come back. So we didn't forget you guys.
Nobody wants financial advice from me.
Exactly. Be like, what not to do? Like,
I actually do just you fine. Do all right. Considering my means, I think I am very frugal and responsible.
Yeah. But
second, millennial stereotypes.
Yeah, you and Michelle. Michaela.
Michaela.
Yeah. So instead, I thought, you know, a question that we could throw out there is, what do you got for the World Series?
I mean, I thought, you know, I didn't actually feel great going into the wild card game. I thought maybe the stuff had run out, but especially, and then, oh God, it was so tense. And Syndergaard was dealing, but it looks like the even year bullshit is alive, man.
It is. So, I guess it's real. How can we even predict against it? Three-run home run in the ninth inning, 0-0 game.
Connor Gillespie. Oh, God. Sorry, everyone who doesn't like baseball.
I'm not yelled. Sorry.
Like, I screamed. I spun around. I had to rewatch the home run because I missed all the reactions because I was, like, jumping up in the air. Oh, it's so amazing because, like, I was actually feeling anxiety from that game because it was so tight and stressful.
I can relate because the night before, the Blue Jays go into extra innings until they hit a three-run home run. Really, three home runs is the way to go if you want excitement.
Yeah. So you know what? I think despite the Cubs being super good, I think we're actually pretty well matched for weakness wise. Like, I think we can take them. Hopefully, knock on wood. So I'm gonna say, and I can't deal with the other side of the NL. I'm just gonna pretend that
she's
not
pointing
happening.
To the door outside the room where that's all happening, even in her apartment. Yes.
Yeah. There's you know, you can't a read civil what war. They all have there, but yeah. It's a rough life, except I clearly am the better end of it. Like, it's not fair.
It's been rougher for one of you than the other, yes. But you have to live in that city.
Yes, that's true, and I think that's the balance. But yeah, so I'm going to say Giants from National League, who are obviously going to win because it's 2016. And let's see. Oh, you know what? I think it's going to be Cleveland, and I think we're going to avenge the Warriors.
There you go.
You know what? In the Indians, they're going to blow a 3-1 lead.
You know, people forget that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead to Cleveland. It's just not talked about that much. I don't have the courage to predict that the Jays are going to go all the way because I don't know if you can win every game on a 3-run home run. Although tonight they didn't have to. So maybe if they could just do 10-1 all the way, I think they'll pound the Rangers and it will be delightful. It's so weird, like, having, like strong opinions about, like, an organization so otherwise unremarkable as the Rangers, but I hate them and they all suck. But, yeah, so they'll crush them, and then the Rangers will...
They were the first team we beat in the World Series. Good times.
And then the Rangers will wait until, you know, late next season to get their revenge with, like, a, you know, beanball because, you know, they've got nuts. But the World Series, I think I'm going to go with the Cubs. Yeah, frankly, me saying it isn't any more jinxed than their existence.
Yeah, it's frustrating because the Cubs, you know, your year was supposed to be 2015. It was prophesied.
That's right, and now you're gonna be the team that's won so much and destroying the dreams of, like, you know, 100-year-old people.
It's so weird. Like, it wasn't. It really wasn't. It doesn't feel like that long ago that we were just like, oh my God, it never, like, the San Francisco team has never won. Like, for example, you know, before 2010, like, the first time, or the last time the Giants had won was when my dad was born, and then they won again when my niece was born. You know, like, that is three generations. But, yeah, it's fun.
I'm going to say it's the Theo Epstein series. I'm going to say they'll beat the Red Sox. And then I think the Mariners have to like pay him like $50 million or something. Because I feel like they're the now, if the Cubs win, I think the Mariners might be the long-suffering franchise. Is there anybody else?
Well, there's a bunch of teams that have never won. Then it's tricky because there's a bunch of newer teams that like have never won. Like the Nationals.
The Mariners aren't a newer team. They're like almost as old as me now.
But like the Nationals have never won. The Rangers.
They don't. Nationals.
The Rangers had never won.
Rangers.
I guess the
Indians are the suffering team. Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever. Have a less racist mascot. And maybe we'll let you have a worse.
They can suffer.
Yeah.
You don't deserve to win, Cleveland. You're awful.
Like, at least, if you're not going to get rid of the name, at least get rid of the logo. Oh, my God.
Well, they tried that, I think, in the 90s or something. They had, like, a hat that was just, like, an ugly, jagged C.
It's a bad C. I mean, that's the problem. It's a boring-ass C. It's really plain. It looks like minor league teams have better graphic design than that.
Yeah, and people were like, "Yeah, we don't like that. Go back to the racism." And like, eh. And then, like, yeah, it's like, hey, at least our name isn't as racist as the other one, so nobody's talking about us.
Yeah, it's like, true, but oh my God, your logo is so racist.
So bad!
It's really bad. That is like some Peter Pan shit.
Yeah, you're like a character of humans. That ain't right, man.
No.
And actually, I was going to say, and I cheer for a football team called the Eskimos, but I don't cheer for them. That's CFL. Okay, so finish that off now that we've lost everybody that is interested in sports.
Sorry, I really
should have put this before that. We should predict what's going to happen next week. So we'll stick to the pattern of predicting one person per tribe. I'm going to go first. Let's start off. I'm just going to roll over my predictions from last week, basically. I predicted Lucy for, you know, lulz reasons, but now I think it's Lucy. I think, you know, the preview suggesting something's going to happen with this invisible person tells me this invisible person's going home.
I forgot that being on the podcast meant I had to do the predictions now. Am I stuck with these predictions?
Yes.
Ah, crap.
Ish. I don't know. I suppose you could wimp out later, but you have to admit to the wimping out and give out reasons. Actually, I think John did that recently, so sure. Yeah, you can change it if you want.
To stall, I'm going to continue with Figgy.
Me too.
Just because I don't think... Oh, yeah, so I forgot you weren't even done.
No, it's okay.
Well, I guess you said you were rolling him over. I guess I assumed that was both of them. Yeah, so I'm going to stick with Figgy just because, I mean, we got Taylor saying, like, oh, yeah, I've got my girl, like, I'm in a great position. But then the millennials still won. So, like, I feel like that's got to be setting it up, but it doesn't seem like they're going to turn on Taylor. And honestly, as much as I hate being like, yeah, vote out the girl because of the weekly, like, vote out her because Taylor's dumb. You can do whatever you want with him. It'll be fine. Like, keep him as your brute strength, you know, like, worth it. But, so I'm going to say Figgy.
I also think she's just annoying. I think not to us necessarily. Like, I've gotten that vibe from people who be like, she wasn't saved because people liked her.
No.
She was saved because she was useful. But, like, there's the secret scene this week is Hannah talking about it and how, you know, Figgy is probably somebody who's used to getting her way in life and getting attention. Well, that's code for she's annoying. And, like, other people don't come to the island so that you can get attention. They want their own. And then Michelle had a bonus scene where she, you know, she's talking about the easy next thing would be Zeke and Adam. But I kind of want to work with Adam, and I don't know if I want to work with Figgy, you know, to the point where she wants to tie herself to that. So, you know, it could be a situation where she annoys people. I doubt she's going to get less annoying the more empowered she's been in this situation. And it's just like, you're bad for my game, man. Like, you know, you guys just go off and do your thing. Plus, you know, who really wants to be hanging outside the shelter while a sock's on the door, right?
Yeah, seriously. I just hope for their sake. Does anyone, now that I guess it'd be, I was like, does anyone, are they like still a thing? Are they not allowed to say whether they are or not? Like,
oh, currently,
this,
yes.
Like, is this going to be, you know, like, do we have a, is this a, you know, Robin, Amber, Keith, and Whitney, Jamie, and Eric, although I don't think Jamie and Eric actually, I think that was like they flirted and they're like, yeah, we like each other. So they kept on doing that. I don't think, at least we didn't see them like make out. But granted, we didn't see that with Keith and Whitney either, but we all knew. Because they couldn't show that because Whitney was married. Anyway, like, you know, is it that or is it going to be the Candace and Adam where at the reunion they ask if they're dating? They're like, yeah, you know, we live far away from each other.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that we're going to get a proposal at the, no.
Honestly, though, they've twice shown Figgy talking about finding a husband.
Yeah, like, no, that was in pregame stuff.
And in the show. It was in pregame and in the show. Homegirl, you are 23. I know you're living in the South right now, so it might be confusing, but you don't need to. And I know you guys got my but she doesn't. You certainly don't need to like run off with someone you met on a reality show at 23.
I think when you meet a Taylor, though, like you need to lock that down. That is clearly marriage material.
So she wants to move to California. Trust me. There are Taylors abound. I went to school with a guy like that in high school. His name was actually Taylor. And he said Narnar. That was a thing. It was real.
All right, which old is going home?
Okay. I don't think about this. I'm going to say that the Lucy thing will be like a red herring, or it'll be a long con like the Paul thing was. You know, it took a couple weeks. And I'm going to say, if they lose again, that they're going to be like, okay, like, we tried, but you know what? Cece's really dragging us down.
Yeah, I'll say why I think it's Lucy is not just the preview, but, well, actually, okay, so it is the preview, but then what I further think is, like, in the preseason, I just felt like she was going to be, like, a busybody. She's, like a high-motor person. She talks about that, like, she's always doing so many things, and she had the weightlifting and the work and stuff, and I think, you know, the island life and the slower pace is starting to get to her. Now, you know, the obstacle of Paul, Camp Dictator's taken out, she's going to be like, okay, now we can do these things. Like, I think she'll just probably feel herself, talk about much, and that'll annoy people. And then I think Brett and Chris team up with Ken, David, and Cece. Because I also a bit of anger about being blindsided. Ironically, the men's alliance they were trying to avoid is created as a result. And also because the bat signal of women's alliance has gone up, and oh my god, we need to do something about it or they'll destroy us all.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely interesting. I could see that happening, but I can't predict the exact same thing as you.
No, I mean, I'm not good at it, so why would you? All right, so I think is that enough on this episode?
Yeah, I think so.
In general, how are you feeling about the season? Yeah, that sounds about right. That's accurate, I would say.
It's not garbage.
Yeah, it's not. Nothing is really making me, like, upset, except for clearly the stupid theme and the pushing of it that apparently will wake children up that haven't gone to bed yet. And again, people, I'm on a different time zone. If you're thinking, oh my god, how late, I mean, you're not wrong, but you're not as wrong as you think. But like, I think there's potential for it to be good. It's just I don't think it is yet. So you called it. All right, so you may be watching this on YouTube, but you can also find us and our various content on our website at purplerockpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. The show is Purple Rock Pod. I am Purple Rock Andy. John is Purple Rock John. And you?
Purple Rock Emma.
Yeah, it's branding.
Yeah, we got great branding. Josh Wiggler said so.
But
it's an endorsement.
I know, but now he's like, oh, girl, you're not supposed to talk out of school.
He's not listening. It's fine.
He's really not.
endorsing the branding, not the show.
That's right. You can see it. You don't have to hear it. If you have future mailbox questions for myself and John, or you know, who knows, maybe I'll be in a blizzard. You can send them. You can add us on Twitter, obviously. You can DM us there, or you can email us at purplerockpodcast@gmail.com. I kind of like this. I like that it's been spurring on conversations amongst even people that aren't us. Unbelievably, I actually do like other people at least writing things. Maybe not talking. That's my thing. But I do like the input and opinions of others. So send some on if you got any. Anything else?
I'm good. Go Giants.
Support the podcast because things cost a little bit of money and, you know, we'd like it to cost less. You can do so on our website. Go to the Amazon tab. Anything you buy there, we will get a tiny, tiny percentage of. Or you can go to amazon.com/purplerock. Is that right?
Purple Rock Podcast? I think it's purplerockpodcast.com/Amazon, actually.
There you go. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't ever do it because
You can't.
I don't shop at .com. I mean, I could if I'm really excited about paying duty and exchange rates. But, I care that much about the podcast that I should.
I don't do it much. I do it when I do shop. But, you know, I don't do it much because I don't buy things that
because
often,
previously
because I'm
discussed,
a poor millennial.
That's right. You're not getting drones to deliver you things. You can't afford the same day delivery. And, you know, you're doing okay with your finances. Do your
I don't even have Amazon Prime.
That would be too close to paying for content, and you can't have that. You're a millennial.
No.
All right, so I think the main takeaway is that everybody associated with the show wants the Blue Jays to win the World Series, and
Giants.
Jeff Probst is so much older than he pretends to be. See you later.